From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. An organization of 57 tribal governments across the Northwest says the roadless rule should stay in place in Alaska. The Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians passed the resolution at its annual conference last week in Suquamish, Washington, at the request of the organized village of Cake. Right now, the United States Department of Agriculture is considering changes to the federal roadless rule. It could open up new areas to road building and logging in the Tongass National Forest. Tribal governments in Southeast Alaska, such as the one in Cake, are opposed to that. They're concerned about the impact to traditional food sources, which rural communities rely on. The USDA is expected to release a draft decision about the roadless rule sometime this fall. An Alaska Native village has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Interior Department in a continuing campaign to open a tribal gambling hall. Anchorage Daily News reported officials from Eklutna filed a lawsuit seeking to open a hall in Chugiak, about 20 miles north of downtown Anchorage. The complaint filed in August in federal district court in Washington, D.C., represents the tribal government's latest attempt to open the area's first federally licensed gambling facility. Eklutna is a Dena'ina Native community and a federally recognized tribal government, which would allow it to avoid paying a state gambling tax and fee. The lawsuit challenges the Interior Department's 2018 decision that the tribe does not have governmental authority over land where it wants to build. Juneau is planning to have a warming center for the third year, though its location and operation would change. The borough put out a call for bids to provide a new facility, management, and staffing for a cold weather emergency shelter that would run from mid-November to mid-April. The city got just one bid back from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. KTOO's Rasha McChesney asks how the new facility will operate and what homeless residents think of the service.
It's lunchtime at the Glory Hall Homeless Shelter in downtown Juneau. Dozens of shelter residents and drop-ins are sitting around for a meal, a hot cup of coffee, usually surrounded by piles of their belongings. And this time of year, that means backpacks and skateboards, along with heavy winter coats and blankets. News that there could be a warming center this winter came as a surprise. The building where that center was operated for the last 2 years was torn down this past summer. That building was in downtown, and it got a lot of use. City data shows 179 people used it to keep warm last winter.
It was a good spot to rally, to see, you know, during the winter, it's when a lot of people kind of get lost and cold, and it's harder during the winter to keep yourself sheltered. I mean,
Tapia Church was born and raised in Juneau. He's been homeless in the city for about 4 years. Church and others say they can make do outside. They'll find more blankets, curl up under staircases or in other sheltered spots, but it's not easy. He's glad to hear the city is putting money toward operating the emergency winter shelter again. But the particulars of the proposal are important. His number one issue? Transportation. St. Vincent de Paul is the local arm of a national Catholic charity. If it gets final approval to operate the shelter, staff will run it from a location on Teal Street in the valley. But that's several miles from downtown. Church says a lot of homeless people in Juneau live in downtown, and traveling can be complicated.
You know, I mean, a lot of us have to carry our houses on our back. And if you leave anything anywhere, well, you might as well consider it gone.
That question of transportation hasn't quite been resolved yet. Bradley Perkins is the general manager for the St. Vincent de Paul Society. He says they'll rely on a combination of city buses, and when those stop running at 11:30 p.m., a shuttle, though they don't have one yet. Perkins says he's hoping to get one donated. He says there's not currently a plan to give people vouchers to offset the costs of bus fare, but they're considering it. He doesn't think transportation to and from downtown will be a big issue. He disagrees with the idea that the bulk of homeless people in Juneau live in downtown.
No, they're actually, especially now, they're all over the place. These are all our clients anyway. We know all the people there. We've seen them all year. We are very well aware of these people.
Back at the Glory Hall, Church says he hopes assembly members make transportation funding a priority.
If we had $2 to spend on something, it would be on food or, you know, anything that can keep us warm or anything during the night, because just getting money alone is hard enough. But to just hop on a bus isn't just hopping on a bus. It's to sit around for a couple hours asking people for change and stuff like that. It's just one more process.
Others at the Glory Hall said they'd likely use the warming shelter because they have no other place to go. But they have other concerns. A woman named Heather, who prefers not to give her last name, says she's used the warming center in the past, but she wishes services would be synchronized a little better. The warming shelter in the valley would operate between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. on days when it's 32 degrees or colder. The Glory Hall doesn't open for breakfast until 7 a.m.
And so there was a half hour time frame to kill before this place was even open in the morning to come in and get coffee. It would be nice to have it coordinated to where as soon as one's ends, the other one's open, you know what I mean?
Heather says she's lived in Juneau for years. She sees this effort to move the warming center out to the valley as yet another way for the city to push homeless people out of downtown. But Perkins says St. Vincent will now be able to provide a lot of services from its location in the valley. If the final approval comes through from the Borough Assembly, St. Vincent will be operating a sleep-off center for intoxicated people, a transitional housing facility, a warming shelter, and a food pantry from the same building complex.
There's a continuum, and so we're going to have the CCFR, the fire department, ETs sitting actually, you know, I don't know, 100 feet from where the sleep-off is. And so if they bring people in that turn out they don't need to be in sleep-off, they can just walk over and put them right into the warming center.
The final approval of the $125,000 contract will be in front of the assembly on Monday at 7 p.m. It's on the consent agenda, and that means it could be approved without discussion. But there will be time for public comment at that meeting. From KTOO, I'm Rasha McChesney.
8th graders in Juneau had a day at the theater this month to watch Devilfish, a play that tells the story of a young Tlingit girl struggling with grief and new responsibility. After the performances, cast and crew visited middle schools to answer questions and share a few tricks of the trade. KTOO's Zoe Gruskin has more.
Aaron Tripp, star of Devilfish, is standing in the cafeteria of Juneau's Floyd Dryden Middle School. In front of her, 8th graders are squeezed together at lunch tables, watching Tripp cradle an invisible basket.
Okay, so your berry basket's in your left hand, right here. This is your basket. And so you're going to pick a berry on your left, right here. Put it in your basket. Pick one on your right. Put it in your basket. Say thank you to the berries.
Thank you, berries.
Thank you, berries. With your hand. Like
Tripp is teaching the students a berry-picking dance from the play, which they all watched a couple days before. In the show, when we first meet Tripp's character, Antena 2, she's about their age. Playwright Vera Starbird didn't write Devilfish with middle schoolers in mind, but she told the students,
by far, the middle school classes were the favorite crowd. Thank you guys so much, not only for coming, but for being an awesome audience. When you react to things in your energy, really affects how the actors are in the play.
Anne Starbird realized, it makes sense. The play is about a young woman coming of age. She fights with her mother. She has a complicated love life. That came up a lot during the question and answer session in the Floyd Dryden cafeteria.
Does she like him or him?
I love both of them, okay? That's what it is. It's a love triangle.
Antena 2 is also dealing with immense grief. As the play opens, she's just lost her entire village to the mysterious and possibly monstrous Devilfish. Starbird, who is Tlingit and Dainina, drew inspiration from stories she heard growing up from her parents and elders. Her story of Antena 2 first took form as a book she wrote more than 10 years ago. Later, she adapted it into this play, which had its world premiere this fall at Juneau's Perseverance Theater. Juneau 8th graders got to see the show and meet some of its stars and creators through a program that connects students to artists in the community. Stephen Blanchett, Art Education Director at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, helps coordinate the program.
I have seen firsthand the impact that it makes in community, creating new dancers, creating new singers, creating mask makers, creating drummers. I mean, those type of things that when you see that happen in a place, it's huge.
The hope, of course, is that students will be inspired by the work they see, maybe even want to make some art themselves. But Starbird says the inspiration goes both ways.
The way they reacted just made me so excited. This has me, like, really thinking about I need to do a show just for kids.
Starbird will write 3 more plays for Perseverance Theater over the next 3 years. One of them, she says, just might be a children's play.
All right. Are you guys ready? All right. Gook!
In Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
Indian Country Today announced it's opening an Alaska News Bureau at Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage. The online news site is one of the largest news organizations in the country, solely dedicated to Native journalists reporting on Indigenous issues. A Petersburg man died after his skiff flipped in ocean waters west of the city. Alaska State Troopers say 50-year-old Doug Larson died after spending up to 2 hours in Duncan Canal. Larson and 40-year-old Charles King, also of Petersburg, on Friday attempted to help another boat that was stuck about 12 miles west of Petersburg. Their 12-foot skiff flipped and put both men into the water for 1 to 2 hours. The men clung to the skiff. When a Coast Guard helicopter crew arrived, King was still conscious. Larson died in the cold water. Neither man wore a life jacket. Alaska wildlife authorities have warned residents to be aware of Kodiak bears after multiple sightings and encounters were reported near residential areas. Kodiak Daily Mirror reported Friday that Alaska wildlife troopers confirmed at least 3 bears could be recognized as frequent visitors to areas inside Kodiak city limits. Troopers say Kodiak bears often break fences and gates and enter vehicles in search of food. Authorities say the animals are learning to break into unlocked vehicles by opening the doors with their teeth. And finally, a polar bear at the Alaska Zoo has died. Officials announced on the zoo website today that 19-year-old Lutiak died Sunday. The beloved animal was generally referred to as Lou or Louie. He was part of the zoo since 2006. After the bear died, an evaluation found a mass around and in one of his kidneys. Zoo officials say the condition often goes undetected in animals that large. A more comprehensive pathology review is planned. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, October 14th, 2019, Indigenous Peoples Day. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.